Hi everyone, you're listening to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. This show is all about building a hub of relevant, insightful, and actionable business insights that can help drive greater performance and innovation. I've worked with several tech startups myself and know from experience that success is underpinned by a passion for continual learning and growth. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to speak with our guests and learn from their stories. If you enjoy this podcast, you can download the free ebook featuring my personal podcast highlights from the past 2 years at www.venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. If you're looking for more information on today's episode, just head over to the Venturi website to check out the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Awesome. So we got Sophie Seiwald here. She's the managing director at MercedesBenz.io. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Sophie.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's awesome to have you on. And thanks for doing this on a Monday as well. You must be one of those kind of positive energy kind of people, because it's very rare that people are willing to do these on a Monday morning, or, you know, so you must be one of those morning people and, you know, super positive energy to be willing to have a chat with me on a Monday.
No, it's not like that, actually. A lot of things are happening on Mondays in our organization. So we have our all hands meeting Monday morning. And so for me, Monday is usually filled with energy, yeah. But it has nothing to do with me being a morning person.
Yeah, well, I think it's good. It drags me out of it, because I'm not a Monday person. Like, I tend to find Mondays are quite productive. But it's just that I think most of the time it's other people, of course, who just aren't willing to talk on a Monday. I don't know whether that's just a coincidence or not, but yeah, it's nice to finally have one on a Monday. Actually, I really look forward to doing these, so I'm glad you obliged. Anyway, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's going to be fun talking with you. Just the wealth of experience and knowledge that you bring to the table, it's such a pleasure to have you here and have the opportunity to ask you selfishly a lot of questions that hopefully I'll get a lot of value out of. So great to have you here, and I think the first thing I think is going to be particularly compelling for people is the actual company and the brand that you kind of represent, Mercedes-Benz.io. I would assume most people on the planet know what Mercedes-Benz is, but Mercedes-Benz.io, I thought it might be interesting to get the little bit of the story behind that and how you were such an intriguing part of building out Mercedes-Benz.io.
Yeah, so we're actually quite a young brand, Mercedes-Benz.io. We've been in the market now almost for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But we've had a different label before. So actually, part of our company has been acquired. Mm-hmm. The previous company was called Sinteo, and that already had kind of a Mercedes-Benz touch. So a couple of years ago, Daimler said, hey, if we would like to do digital transformation and learn how to build digital products, mm-hmm. we should maybe think about a different approach and how to do that. So they formed another company, as called Sinteo, with the clear purpose to incubate more or less new product ideas for our customers in that company. And the whole concept was very successful. And there was always the opportunity for Mercedes to bring this company back into the Mercedes-Benz or under the Mercedes-Benz umbrella. So this is what happened around about 2 years ago. The Sinteo concept was brought back into the whole corporate environment. And with the same move, there was a decision to actually expand in terms of people and in terms of locations. So now we're 3 locations in Berlin, in Lisbon, and in Stuttgart. And today we are around about 300 people who are working on our digital customer front ends for Mercedes-Benz.
Exciting, very exciting, yeah. Times. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being at a more exciting place, really. You know, the collaboration, I think it's almost what people perceive to be kind of the ideal situation, is kind of a relatively small kind of environment to the company that you work for, but ultimately backed by, you know, a much bigger brand. In a lot of people's cases, it's kind of the best of both worlds in a lot of senses, but I'm sure there's still been kind of significant kind of growing pains as you, you know, continue to build and expand the business?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm obviously it's somehow very blessed situation. You have such a big brand in the back and you're the ones that are building the digital front ends for the customers who are buying one of the greatest cars, from my opinion, in the world. And that's one thing. So that's basically from a topic perspective, I think it couldn't get any better. And also from a setup perspective, I also think can't get any better. There is obviously from a company that runs with 70 people to a company that runs with 300 people, quite a lot of things that are happening that need to mature or need to grow or need to be installed so it actually works. And so that has been the challenge of last year, to be quite honest, to bring together three locations under one roof, to create one company out of it, to give it a brand that is beyond the car brand. So we are in the end a company that combines technology and creativity. And that was our big challenge of last year.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine that. First question that kind of comes to mind from that actually is whether there was a motivation to obviously bring the three, the three locations together, so to speak, and whether there was like a motivation to try and create a singular culture, or was it important to kind of resist that and, you know, I sort of allow them to have their, maintain their own cultures and environments, because, you know, obviously they've been successful to that point. It must be a balance now with that regard, I would assume.
Absolutely. There is always a beauty in having three individual cultures or one big one. There are different forces behind that. And I think if you ask people within the location, you're like, yeah, you know, we are within us, it's all good. But I believe that, especially in the digital age, there should not be something like organizational boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it fits, right? It does not, it actually compromises the whole concept of thinking together, working together, being collaborative, and thinking beyond silos that have been there in big organizations. But I also appreciate and respect local forms of culture that hopefully are there, like be it in Berlin, the guys who are going to the Späti or whatever to hang out with each other or hang out at the rooftop or doing their own meetups. That's all good and fine, but that's part of our culture and it's accepted. But the overall thinking on how we approach work and how we approach technology, that's something we should be having a unified opinion about. And that's what I'm working on. So I'm not trying to standardize three locations, but use the potentials of every individual location and define more on a professional level what we want to achieve as a company.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of, I think people throw that blanket, and I suppose I intentionally kind of did that as well, you know, is say, right, this is culture. You've got to kind of bring all three cultures kind of together, but it's such a blanket statement, and it really needs more of a granular look on like what aspects, like you mentioned, you're kind of comfortable keeping versus, you know, I suppose from an infrastructure perspective, like what we probably need to bring cohesively together. And, you know, is it something that you would be able to plan out in advance, or is there an element of kind of, you know, fail fast kind of mentality when trying to start something like that?
So concerning culture and especially the purpose that we are trying to pursue, actually, I think we tried a couple of things where we thought, hey, you know, in our in the young age of our company and, you know, being having a lot of young talents inside, should be easy to get together and work on this by ourselves. But to be honest, that was not so successful because there were so many opinions in the room and you know, everyone tried to do something else and it went kind of a little bit of crazy. So until the mid of the year or last year, we actually tried it a little bit to moderate ourselves and to try to bring this discussion of those different locations together. But in the end, we actually decided around about in the summer, okay, now we'll have to go through a small journey. And we had one team dedicated to basically lead us through a process of basically self-discovery. And we have a couple of, twice a year we do so-called pit stops. So it's when we all get together in the same location. We have 2 days of events and information and workshops. And we use that format to actually intensively work on our culture and our identity and really get to the point of what actually makes us unique to others. And we that proved to be successful. So it was a little bit of a journey, and it was also not like straightforward. And I also say it's not done, because culture is never done, but it's at least became a precise picture, and we could nail it down. And I think that was important. So now there is no further discussion on it, and no one is like, redoing or starting from scratch again on what actually we should do in terms of a combined company culture. And I think that proved very successful. So we got a little bit of guidance, and we got a little bit of a process. And to do it like a self, as said, like, involve everyone and, a little bit like hands-on mentality, that didn't prove to be that perfect, to be honest, as surprising as it sounds.
Interesting. Yeah. Really interesting. So I suppose that's a constant learning. And I suppose you alluded to, is there's a surprise in a lot of elements. And I suppose it begs the question for me, just, based on the kind of the wealth of experience, I think, one might assume that, you perhaps aren't surprised anymore by things, but it's interesting that you, I suppose, you still are. And I just wonder whether, looking back and gaining some perspective, how often you kind of are surprised by, a direction that you've kind of had to take. And, when, I suppose, you or a team have had a solid theory, tried it and being surprised and learned from that. How frequently do you feel like that kind of happens and has happened over, previous times in your career?
It happens quite a lot. it's really, because you obviously through past experiences, you think like, okay, I've been through that, or that's a normal reaction, or that proved to be the right thing. But it always also applies to the context. And the situation we had here within the company is definitely out of a regular corporate context. So things that I thought, would work, or they're just like a given because we are in the end still part of the bigger corporation, they don't work at all. And for me, it was an extreme learning experience. So far in all of my jobs, I had an extreme learning experience. In this one, to be honest, I have the biggest learning experience in terms of culture and organizational development, how much impact you can have through changing leadership style, changing organizations, and growing. Yeah.
Interesting.
Then that's for me, yeah.
How and,
you... Like, yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
No, just saying, we are living a very low hierarchy organizational concept. Actually, we are one of the biggest holacracy practitioners out there.
Interesting.
So we don't have hierarchy, so we don't have boss. No one would say, my boss is X, Y, Z. So it's more like a self-organized bunch of people. But we also see the less managers or leaders there are, the more we actually need real leadership of everyone individually. So you would be surprised how much people actually seek for, a direction. And that's very hard, especially juniors, to be completely unguided. And that's something that I've been super surprised at, because you think everyone is aiming for being low hierarchy and less structure and so on, but actually it's total contrary. which does not result in anarchy or, you know, absolute craziness. It's just a different form of organization, and that was super exciting to see.
Hierarchy. We've had a couple of people on the show actually who've really practiced this, you know, and do all the kind of, you know, I suppose the attention grabbing headlines, like, you know, making salaries completely, you know, transparent and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. I really buy into the idea of it, I think, a lot, but it's really interesting that you kind of raise the point that some people do seek out kind of leadership. And I think also, like, I think what it does into a certain extent, this is obviously kind of being on the negative side of hierarchy, but, but, you know, I think that the negative aspects of it are that it kind of calls out the fact that we almost are not as bought into the value, the real talent and skill that it takes in, like, management and leadership. And I do think that there are people out there who are just really good at it, and there are a lot of people out there who are really bad at it. And I think people have felt that it's become necessary to have something like this because of how many people who are just bad at it. And I think that that's just, in general, all of our faults, really, for not really taking it as seriously as we perhaps should. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, you never really win as a manager or as a leader, really, because, you know, everyone looks at you and probably thinks that they can do a better job, right? You know, usually this is the cynic in me, so sorry to be negative for a minute, but I do think that that is a lot of the reality of the situation. And then you kind of offer it to people as, like, right, well, there's completely flat structure, and then, as you say, then people are still seeking out leadership and want direction. So it's kind of a, you know, at what point do you kind of make a hard decision, you know, ironically, as a leader, you know, to say that this is ultimately what we've kind of decided? Because it's a fascinating time that we're in at the moment, and I've seen this firsthand, struggling with this kind of this battle between this on this exact subject. So how do you kind of ultimately, it's difficult to make a correct decision, because there's pros and cons to both sides. And it almost feels to me as though it becomes quite political, in the sense that, you know, people want to really go fully one way or fully the other way. And I'm not convinced, you know, with what direction to look, really, at the moment. I, as you can probably tell, I'm quite confused myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when my colleague, who is the CFO, and I were starting, we were starting almost at the same time with this company, and we had, like, a whole bunch of people said, please get rid of that holacracy topic. You know, we should implement a classic hierarchy and just, you know, do it. And then we had a whole other bunch of people who said, no, this brings a lot of chances and opportunities and so on. So actually what we said, okay, let's wait for half a year, because also for me it was new. And I was a little bit skeptical, but at the same time curious. And we actually waited, as I said, almost half a year to make a final call. And we decided to move on with this concept, and also because we wanted to see certain behaviors. We wanted to have our people be self-organized. We wanted them to actually own what they're doing and give them the freedom to design it by themselves. And that's things that holacracy or a responsive organizational framework helps you to do. And at the same time, you can create structure. Mm-hmm. And you can create orientation. And that's, I think, what the beauty is of that system. Nevertheless, sometimes I also, like, I have my problems with it. You know, you tend to get stuck in discussions on who is responsible for what and which role are you acting on and things like this. So, but in the end, to be honest, for the thing that we want to achieve in terms of the culture we want to celebrate in this company and the people we are hiring, we thought that the responsive organization framework fits better to us than a classic corporate hierarchy framework where things are being, you know, designed to power. And yeah, we've been actually quite successful. We lowered the tone a little bit on certain things. We made it a little bit more approachable. We're investing a lot of time in getting people on the system to understand it and to use it. And I think that's as good as it can get. And we're actually quite happy at the moment of how we are running it. So, but I understand, I always also encourage everyone to think why you do this, what do you want to achieve with it, and not just do it because it's cool. It's the same thing like developing in an HL framework. Everyone seems to be doing it, but no one asks why, what are you trying to achieve by using it? And I think you should be more thinking about that and then deciding which framework fits best to you, depending on what you want to do, not just jumping on the fastest train. It's not always the best choice from my perspective.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I think, like you say, these things generate momentum. Someone mentions it at a conference, before you know it, everyone's giving it a go. And I think it's just... it's bespoke, isn't it? This is why everyone's, I suppose, in business seems to be constantly looking for a silver bullet. You get kind of one success story and all of a sudden people think that that's it. And it's kind of marketed that way, I suppose, to kind of glorify it. But it's just a good kind of reminder that it's finding what kind of fits for you, depending on the talent that you're probably bringing into a system, right? I suppose, you know, yours is like pretty much, you know, majority developers and architects and stuff like that, right?
Okay, so we got like half of our staff comes from a technological background. So we got developers, all kinds of frameworks. We got architects, we have support engineers. So that's basically half of our skills, but we also have lots of creative people, starting from growth managers to designers and people who can define concepts to product owners and data scientists. So we got like the whole skill set, which is required, at least from my perspective, to build successfully a product for end customers. Awesome. Talking about software product.
Yeah. Exciting. Your background as well, have you always been heavily involved with the technical side? Or leading, or were you technical yourself?
So I'm not a technical, unfortunately, but I've been always working in IT within the company. So I'm a real Daimler child, as you might call it. So I've started my career with Daimler as an intern, got into the trainee program, and then always ever since was involved in IT projects and all sorts of, from SAP to individual software. And etc. But for me, IT was always only one part of the whole thing, and defining big system landscapes or defining the new overall architecture for a certain thing. But I always had components where creativity and integrating people and other aspects were equally important. But I don't have an engineering background.
Totally amazing, though. I don't think necessarily you perhaps do. I think leadership in itself is a completely like bespoke skill, and I think if you've got it, it's unique, and it's a perspective that I kind of tend to have, really. I wanted to ask as well, like, obviously you developed and built such a phenomenal career. Like, when you look back, did you feel as though, you know, you had kind of mentors or leaders that you looked up to, took a lot from, took bits and pieces from, and really built that into your career? You know, is there specific people or times and experiences that you look back on and believe that that's it allowed you to, you know, be in the position that you're in now?
Absolutely. So number one, with all of my previous bosses, so to say, I still have very close relationships. So I tend to be quite loyal to people that I work for when we are working for the same goals. And so that has always been proven to be very positive for my career, to have a good relationship and not just to work for anyone just because you have to. But to be quite honest, the biggest change in my life was when I moved to Singapore from Europe to Singapore like 5 years ago. Now I'm back in Germany, but for me, that was kind of a tough one because, to be quite frank, in the beginning of my career, basically the first time I got a promotion, retrospectively, I might have not been the best boss. Like, I was quite bossy, and I was, because I always thought, like, this is how you're supposed to be. And this is like, bosses are bossy, and, you know, they demand things, and, you know, there needs to be a professional distance and stuff like this. And then I moved to Singapore, and I got into this organization within financial services where one of the biggest priorities of them was culture and leadership. And I was not used to that. So there was one guy who was leading that organization back then, and I never met him so far in my whole life. But he had such a lasting impression to that organization because of everything that he did in terms of culture work that I was just amazed. And I thought, like, wow, there is somehow a different aspect than just to work and think about numbers and facts and project plans, but there seems to be something bigger. And that for me was the biggest change in my personal leadership behavior and how I thought about leadership in itself. And the 3 years in Singapore were eye-opening for me. So I can only recommend anyone to go abroad and do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you feel that, you know, you still have, you know, in perhaps not as, you know, as a bigger jump, leap of faith as doing something like that, going abroad or, you know, really expanding your horizons. But do you still try and make yourself, you know, kind of, put yourself in situations that might perhaps not feel as comfortable, even to this day?
There are, yeah. So, like, we never met in person. Nevertheless, like, if people see me and people experience me, they think, like, I must be, like, a stage performer that I like to stand in front of people and talk. But it's, for me, like, a really big challenge. I've been working on this last 1.5 years, to stand in front of people, to do a proper keynote, to bring across my messages. So that's for me still, and I'm getting more and more used to it, fortunately, and I also have lots of exposure through my job, but to really feel comfortable on stage and feel comfortable in front of many people. So that's my current learning, and also to try to deliver a proper message to the people so they understand it. And I think that's my uncomfortable zone so far. And also coming to going back to the corporate world and going back to Mercedes, I also sometimes have to, go back into this mode of how the Daimler really works. And it's not everything is in this heaven of Mercedes-Benz I.O. where everything seems to be possible. So that's my two, let's say, uncomfy areas where I'm actively working on for myself.
Awesome.
Yeah. But all of us, it's being uncomfortable is not everyone's favorite every day.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it's so important to do so though, I think, you know, even in certain situations. I just think it's how we kind of grow, you know. It's doing it calculated. It's not just, you know, making things difficult for yourself for the sake of it. So don't get me wrong, people. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that there are elements where it's just doing something new. Even do you think that even though, you know, it might not be kind of directly related to your work or to what you're doing right now, that still kind of pursuing things and challenging yourself in various different ways, whatever that might be, do you think that there's still like a lot of value in that, and ultimately it does have an impact on, you know, improving, you know, your abilities at work? Are you someone who kind of buys into that, so to speak?
Yeah, I'm kind of a self-critical person, so I always try to be the best at a lot of things, and also in my private area I try to challenge myself. So be it last year, my goal was to go back into a handstand at doing yoga for whatever reason. I don't know why. But it pushed me to an extent that suddenly I was like 3 or 4 times a week in yoga just to get this headstand somehow done, right? And so I'm like exploring different areas, be it like I want to do the best meal for dinner or invent a new way on how to cook the best steak. There are thousands of things that I'm constantly on to. And it's a little bit of a problem because I tend to lose focus then, right? And then I do everything and I get totally stressed out. But yeah, it's ultimately enhances myself. I'm really glad I learned a lot about red wine. I learned a lot about steaks. I learned a lot about yoga. It all helps in certain aspects. So I believe in that, and you can try everything. And if you don't like it anymore, then just drop it after a while, but at least give it a try.
Yeah.
And I think saying yes, or saying yes to opportunities, or just to be curious, it helps in a lot of aspects. You have a lot of topics to talk about with so many people.
Yeah. It's so true. It's amazing how some of these things can, you know, really, like you say, be just kind of work themselves back around, can't they? Just the people that you meet through them, or, you know, the opportunities or the ideas, you know, the amount of times like I find myself, you know, just, you know, doing whatever, playing golf, doing etc., and just having conversations with people. And, you know, they might not be like directly giving me advice, but I'll be listening to something they say and I think, ah, that's really interesting. And then I'll kind of go back to work and think about that and think about how I can use that for good in, you know, the work that I'm doing. And, you know, just having those kind of conversations offline, for some reason, I think offline, there just seems to be some great substance to be had. You know, we're so digitally focused in our ways of communicating that, you know, I think just getting offline and having real conversations with people, for me, and maybe I'm old school, but it just seems to have like so much more substance to them.
Yeah, that's funny. So this year I tried to define it for the first 4 months, and this year I tried a challenge every month to do something that I have had as a habit. Like, for example, my Instagram stories or Instagram usage was tremendously high. Mm-hmm. So I decided to do one thing that I somehow cannot stop doing for 1 month. And that was also very interesting to see lots of people followed that. So, for example, I stopped Instagram for 1 month, or then 1 month I didn't go shopping, in a sense of also no groceries, and just let my whole cabinet go empty. And a lot of people followed that, and it was really interesting that suddenly you had, you know, other things to talk to also at work, and you can see, oh wow, there are other people who do the same thing, or just, I don't know, enhance your intellectual horizon somehow. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. So I'm conscious of the time here as well, Sophie, so I don't want to keep you for kind of too much longer. But I haven't asked this question actually for a lot, but I thought it'd be really interesting to ask you. If you were to give yourself a condensed perhaps piece of advice to a, let's say, you know, fresh graduate, maybe 21-year-old Sophie, what, looking back, what would be that kind of piece of advice that you would give to her?
I'd say be a little bit less ambitious in that sense, mm-hmm. because I always thought I needed to start to work as soon as possible, and I didn't allow myself a lot of things, for example, extensive traveling. And now when I see one of our interns sitting around, they say, well, I'm planning to do 3 months of traveling to a Southeast Asia to Australia. Please do it. You know, no one's going to ask you what did you do between October 2017 and December 2017? No one's asking that. And after a while, you're just too comfy in your job and the money to actually get out and do it, or you're becoming kind of like, oh, okay, no, I'm not sleeping in a youth hostel anymore and stuff like this. So, and I'd say there is, for people who are now graduating, as stupid as it sounds, like, you should enjoy and size the moment, and there's enough work ahead of you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my more or less my private or personal opinion. And of course, in terms of the professional development, you can essentially these days start everything that you want as long as you want it enough. And I think that's really, really amazing that these days with everyone networking, everyone getting together and everything, the whole world is basically open, that you can essentially become anything that you want. You just have to want it hard enough.
Agreed. Yeah. Sophie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to check out more of Venturi's Voice, but you're unsure where to begin, you can find my recommended top 12 episodes at venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. See you next time.